Welcome to Our Future Skies from me, John Strickland, in partnership with AIG. This episode is a different one to others in the series. It's more of a magazine format, and that's because I'm here at the AGM for IATA, the Airline Global Trade Body, International Air Transport Association. It's a forum for the discussion of pressing and weighty issues affecting the industry, be they positive or negative. There's a focus on the future. The room is full of CEOs from World Airlines, and there's much also informal corridor conversation off the conference floor. I'm taking the temperature and speaking with a number of the leaders here to gain their perspectives on what may be in store for their airlines and the industry as a whole. Given that we're here in Dubai, I'm also interested to hear particularly from leaders from airlines in the region. It's a vibrant part of the world. There's a lot going on and eyes are firmly on the future. I also want to hear from IATA's Director General on what he sees are the coming issues of the years ahead. So let's find a quiet place and start off with a chat with him. Willie Walsh, Director General of IATA. Welcome to Our Future Skies.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
Good to see you again. Of course, you've had a long career in the industry, starting as a pilot, running a number of airlines, including Aer Lingus, British Airways, and being founding CEO of IAG. You're now running the trade body. Just give me your perceptions at this point in time of where you would say the industry is as we have this 80th meeting, I think, of the AGM for IATA.
Yeah, the good news, we're in much better shape than we were last year, and indeed, the past few years, given the serious crisis that we faced as a result of the COVID pandemic. So we're increasing our profitability forecast for 2024. We're now looking at profits in the order of $30 billion on record revenues of close to $1 trillion. It's a lot of money, but when you look at it in margin terms, it's still a very low margin, a net margin of 3.1%, well below the record net margin we achieved, which was in 2015 and 2017, of 5%. And even 5% is incredibly low. Yeah. So, our margins remain wafer thin. And it's important for people to realize that, while the figures are big, when we express it in margin terms, there's still a long way for us to go.
And William, the time I've known you, I would describe you as an optimist by nature. And even in the times of greatest adversity, you're able to put an optimistic outlook. Perhaps from being a pilot, you've got to be calm and cool under pressure. If we're looking ahead, do you think this buoyancy is going to continue? Because we are in turbulent times. I mean, the industry has been very strong in terms of traffic recovery. You described those good results. But looking into, say, the next decade or so, do you think that's going to continue, especially in very challenging geopolitical environment developing currently?
Yeah, I think there's been lots of challenges in the past. Our industry has faced a lot of turbulence over the years. In the 45 years I've been in it, it's never been smooth.
Yeah.
So I think many of the issues we face today, I describe as business as usual challenges. I suppose it helps that when we went through the period of the pandemic, we were able to reset the bar in terms of what represented a crisis. I'm optimistic. I am genuinely optimistic. I see the demand environment for the industry continuing to be positive. I think there are still areas for significant recovery. So, at a global level, we're back to where we were in 2019, but some individual markets are still well below where they were. And we're, back on a growth trajectory in some of the stronger markets around the world as well. And I look at places like India, China, Africa, Latin America. I see huge opportunity there. We're often focused on what's happening in the US and in Europe. But I think when you witness what China and India are experiencing, particularly India, it's just incredible what aviation will represent in terms of economic contribution and economic opportunity there.
Well, you've kind of, in many ways, preempted a question I wanted to ask you, Willie, which is exactly on those lines. I mean, you and I come from a European background, and I'm increasingly calling it myself the old world, old Europe, old USA to an extent. There's so much kind of restriction going on regulatorily. We need more consolidation in the industry, not least in Europe. It's nothing as far as we've seen in the US. The whole approach to another topic, which I want to ask you about in a moment, about the environment, a lot of regulation coming in there. But as you said, India, China and those countries, we're in the Gulf. We've just heard about the new airport being built in Dubai. There's orders in Saudi Arabia, new airlines being born. India,
a good friend of yours and mine, Peter Elbers. I've spoken to him recently, and he's full of energy, a European who's working in a newly energized environment with that massive growth of India. Are we getting into maybe a future kind of polarization, a divided world for the industry for these reasons?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, we've talked for many years about the center of gravity of the industry moving east, which is what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. I can remember making speeches in London back in 2011, when I was highlighting what was happening in Dubai and with Emirates. And at the time, you know, I predicted that Dubai would overtake Heathrow as the busiest international airport in the world in, I think I said in 4 years, by 2014, 2015, which it did. Mm-hmm. The general consensus at the time was that it would take them, you know, well into 2020 in that decade to get beyond where Heathrow was. And I think we need to understand that when we look at the industry from a European point of view, it's very, very different to the rest of the world. And the US is the same. Now, these are very mature markets. Now, we expect those markets to grow, but nowhere close to the growth that we'll witness in Asia. I was actually with Peter Elbers in New Delhi a couple of weeks ago, visited their operations center, the Indigo operations center. On the day I was there, Indigo were operating 2,000 flights.
It's amazing.
Operating to 88 airports in India. And, you look at what they're projecting to do in the country there and how important it will be for India, because they don't have the road and rail network that we have in Europe. They will be hugely dependent on aviation to unleash the massive economic benefit that is there. So, I'm excited about the future of the industry. I think, it will be particularly the case that, growth opportunities will be much stronger outside of Europe and the US. And, you look at Peter now. He's
like a new man.
Yeah, he's 10 years younger than he was. You know, he's healthier than he ever was. He's fitter than he ever was. And, he's got a big smile on his face. And we're all envious of what he's doing. I think in terms of market cap, Indigo is number three in the world. And often, people are unaware of what has happened there. They carried 100 million passengers last year.
Last year.
It took them, 17 years to get to 100 million. I'm sure Peter's given you these figures. The idea that you can get to 100 million in 17 years, I think it took Southwest 34 years to do that. So phenomenal. And it's only the beginning.
Exactly. And, these countries, people want to travel. There's a joy of travel. There's a necessity to travel. I just wonder, in some ways, if some politicians in Europe seem to have lost sight of the economic value of aviation. They're quick to condemn, quick to shackle, and not quick to acknowledge that where would it be without it?
I think that's a fair assessment. My view of Europe is that they believe that the economic benefit can be retained even by suppressing the growth in the size of the industry, which I think is nonsense. I would hate to see the day where we go back to an industry where only the rich can travel. And it is fascinating to see what has happened. So I was doing an analysis of industry seat factors going back to 1945, but really focused on what it was like in the 80s, 90s, and since then. Because this was the period when I was flying, you think back, I guarantee if you spoke to any pilot or cabin crew operating an aircraft, they would say the flights were always full. They weren't.
Wasn't a reality.
Yeah, the average seat factor in the 80s was 64%. 64% across the industry. In the 90s, it was 67%, just over 67%. In the noughties, we got to 74%. And then in the period 2010 to 2019, it was just over 80%. So, we've gone from mid-60s to low 80s. I think that's an incredible achievement. And it's been across the industry. When you think 2019 seat factors for the industry was 82.6, this year we're projecting 82.5. That's why the industry has been successful. More and more people have been able to travel. And many of these politicians who believe that the solution to the environmental challenge is taxation completely misunderstand what will happen. If you introduce greater taxes, all you're going to do is remove from quite a number of people the ability to fly. Mm-hmm. You're not going to stop the flights operating. You're just going to have fewer people sitting in the seats operating, of the flights that will be operating. And we'll start reversing the growth in seed factors and, you know, going backwards. And I think that would be a shame. So, you know, we have a responsibility to ensure that politicians, when they come to making these decisions, understand the consequences of the decisions that they're making.
And I think also the new world, although they're going to grow massively, and you gave the example there of indigo, it's not as though they're unaware of the sustainability issue, is it? They're also investing massively in their own ways to ensure we try to get where we need to get.
No, you're absolutely right. They recognise that they have a responsibility to ensure that, you know, they join the path to net zero in 2050. They're not ignoring that, you know. So, and I think that's impressive that they, you know, they have a double challenge. You know, how do they access the growth that is going to be so important while at the same time reduce the environmental impact that they have? And they, you know, they bought into the measures that we all have to take, particularly utilization of greater volumes of sustainable aviation fuel.
And that in itself is a challenge, isn't it? Getting up to those volumes that we need for the industry. And I guess for you as an organisation, you've just got to keep pushing that message out with politicians, you know, what they need to do to invest in this.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. You know, the transition to solar and wind energy didn't happen overnight and didn't happen without government intervention and government support. And we're not asking for anything special. We're just asking that governments understand the role that they have and that they support the transition to net zero and support the development of SAF in the same way as they supported wind and solar. And you know, they also need to recognize the opportunity that exists. You know, this is a new industry that can sustain significant jobs. You know, it's a real win-win. You improve your environmental footprint and you generate sustainable jobs. And in many cases, you're doing this in economies that, you know, have not been able to benefit from having, you know, oil under the ground. So I think, you know, the more we talk about this, the more we highlight the opportunity and the more we highlight the need to work together, I think the better for the industry.
And to you as a former pilot, will you have any sense of optimism that when we talk about long haul flying, we might actually get somewhere in terms of new propulsion methods and new power sources?
Not in the time frame that we're looking at. So, you know, I think that will happen in due course. But I think, you know, I see that having an impact beyond 2050. You know, maybe in the period from 2040 onwards. Yeah. But, you know, it's not really going to play a significant part in the transition to net zero by 2050. And that's why we've got to be realistic and focus on the areas where we know we can contribute. And, you know, we analysed in IATA, I think 12 or 14 different pathways that various bodies have identified. The thing that's in common with all of them is the importance of sustainable aviation fuel. You know, we estimate that it'll be about 2/3 of the abatement. You know, something will be more, something will be less, but everybody agrees sustainable aviation fuel is going to be critical.
Willie, you're a busy man. Really appreciate you giving us time for the podcast today. So Willie Walsh, Director General of IATA, thanks for being on our Future Skies podcast.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Willie.
Cheers.
We're in Dubai for the AGM of IATA, the industry trade body, and what better than to talk to one of Dubai's hometown airlines? Of course, we're talking about Emirates, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Deputy President of Emirates and Chief Commercial Officer Adnan Kazim. So welcome to Our Future Skies, Adnan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And Dubai is host of IATA this time, which is great to have over 1,500 people coming in this event, which is quite important for Dubai and I guess important for IATA as well.
Absolutely. And it's the first time I've actually been to an AGM myself, despite having a long airline career. We're talking at a time, we're going to look into the future, Adnan, but we're talking at a time when you recently announced some very strong results for 2023. Just give us a bit of a flavour about where Emirates is today. I mean, it looks very strongly recovered from the COVID challenges.
I mean, we have managed really to recover almost 90% of the capacity. We have really back to normal as far as the network is concerned. We have all our 777 flying today back to operation, which is we have today over 140 of them. We have 90 of the 380s back to operation, and we're growing. So things are really ramping up, along with the good recovery that we have made. Last 2 years were quite amazing years, I think, for the company as far as the financials, very strong cash flow that we built in for the company, record profit we achieved, over 53 million passenger we carried the last financial year, which was great, and This year, we are aiming for further growth to come in. So things are looking quite positive, along with the city. I mean, in terms of how things, Dubai is standing today as well.
Well, definitely. I want to ask you more about Dubai itself as we go along. But another thing I think that's happening this year for you, getting new aircraft coming, a new aircraft type with Airbus A350s joining the fleet.
This is quite an interesting milestone for the company, which is a change in the way the capacity will be deployed with Airbus 350. It comes with an average of 300-seaters that will give it the flexibility to enter the phase one of the aircraft delivery that will come in starting from mid of August. We have already announced the routes that will be deployed, 9 places, mainly focusing on regional points in Bahrain, Kuwait, Muscat, but we're going to Colombo, to some points in India like Mumbai and Ahmedabad. We have even announced some routes in Europe like Bologna, Lyon, and at the same time Edinburgh. That's more of like the phase one of it. Phase two of that will come in next year. That will be more for ultra long haul deployments that will take us to many new places, a range of 15 to 17 hours as we commence the deployment of these aircraft for next financial year. But it's quite interesting, and it's something definitely will give us the flexibility we wanted to enter to many new markets, many thinner market that used to be like within the demand, but the capacity we had was too big for it. And this aircraft for sure will be a great milestone for the company way forward.
Well, it's interesting to watch how that pans out, because if we get further out and we look into the next decade, the very large and very popular A380s will gradually start to disappear. And that aircraft and Emirates, to me, they look like a marriage. You know, Airbus A380 would be nothing without Emirates. Emirates, in some ways, would be nothing without what that A380 has done for you. What will that mean as you get into the 2030s? You've already mentioned a bit about the new kind of aircraft.
Sure. I mean, for us, the 380, as I would say, it brought in a lot of wow factor. It gave us the kind of the capacity we wanted to many new routes and many new markets that coming with a heavy demand, slot constraints, like of Heathrow, Paris, and Hong Kong, and Singapore, that was, and Australia was one of these, or some of these markets that we deployed into. But the 380 is something to remain for us, with us, something that we carry on beyond even the 2030 timeline, something that we have it in plan until at least 2038-39. It's part of the core fleet mix that we carry it. So we're in 2024. So you're talking about at least 15 years to come to be there. And we'll play a vital role, because what we think that the way forward, the demand will be even further increased, and with the population growth that we're seeing in the world, with IATA declaring a year by year 4 to 5% growth in the industry, more people are traveling, the 380 will be even more important as a way forward. That's why the company is putting a lot of investment into the retrofit program. As we announced earlier, that we're putting more than $2 billion. This number is even increasing further from the 120 aircraft that we had earlier, 291 aircraft that will be part of the retrofit program. Many of them are 380s plus the 777ERs, because we believe in these aircraft. I mean, we believe that the 380 will add great value, and with the retrofit program that we kicked off with it, already we have 28 of them have gone through a change. Embedding the premium economy is part of the changes we brought in with the refreshing the first class, the business class, as well as the launch and the shower area and economy, something to remain with us for a while, I would say.
And Adnan, you're an Emirati and naturally proud of Dubai's development. I've been coming to Dubai myself since the middle of the 1980s, when I haven't asked you your age, but I'm guessing you might have been a small boy, but I was already traveling here in my 20s, so I've seen how the country has massively transformed in that time. It's continuing to develop, and we just heard recently that you will move to the new airport, which already exists. Dubai World Central will become the airport for Dubai, if I'm not mistaken, from approximately 2030. The capacity, I think, is, if I'm not wrong, is about four times what Dubai International has today. So it sounds like that growth story is still fully embedded for the future.
I mean, Dubai is every time they surprise the world with mega projects and mega things happening. It's quite a vibrant city. You see that across the board, from the hotel industry side of it to the infrastructure in terms of how things are building, into the aviation sector, which is core to Dubai future. The new airport definitely, I think, is a new milestone, I think, that will come in by 2034, when that will be completed. It's 150 million initially. We ramp up to 260 million capacity by end game of that project. As you mentioned, it's going to be tripling the size of where we stand today. Mm-hmm. It's going to be having with a 400 stand gates, and definitely that will put Dubai into the world of aviation as a mega hub, linking the east with the west, and that definitely will open the horizon for Emirates Airline in terms of the capability of what we can do more in terms of the mix of the fleet, the network, the growth, and Dubai City will be completely in a different ballgame by then in terms of the number of tourists, the number of occupancy, the population of the city will look completely different. Definitely something, hope to see it that day, but it's going to be something quite interesting.
And Adnan, how does that fit into the overall development of a region? Because I think one thing I'm seeing, in a way I didn't see before, is enormous aircraft orders and ambitions in other countries. We know, for example, Saudi Arabia is going to develop and has large aircraft orders. We have Indian development, we have Turkish development. Is it all going to be about growth, or do you think people are going to start cannibalizing each other?
I would see it more from an angle of complementing each other, because what's happening in Dubai with the aviation sector and the growth, and what's happening in Saudi, what's happening in Qatar or in Kuwait or Oman, they're all good stuff, I think, for this region. The tourism will come in, ending into Dubai. They can always extend their journey into one of these places and get something, maybe adding value to what Dubai doesn't have it. Likewise, they come to maybe Saudi and end up into Dubai. They all will bring in the value, I think, to the region, and the region definitely will stand in a much greater position as a future. I don't think we'll be competing each other, rather than complementing and adding value to each other and benefiting from each other. So it's really all good thing to see that things are really shaping up even beyond the Gulf area. I mean, with what's happening in Turkey and what's happening in the whole region, is really booming, which is all good thing the way we see it.
No, certainly a really dramatic development. Well, Adnan, it's been a pleasure to talk to you today and to share your visions for Dubai's hometown airline, as I called it, Emirates. Adnan Kazim, Deputy President of Emirates and CCO, thank you very much for being on our Future Skies.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And nice talking to you.
We're talking to a number of airlines in the region, given that we're here in Dubai for the IATA AGM. And one of those airlines is Oman Air. It's a very interesting airline because it's not one of the big three hub carriers, as we know them. And it has, very appropriately to this chat, a new CEO. And he is Khan Kofiatis, was with a low-cost carrier just down the road in Saudi Arabia, Flyadeal. And he's widely experienced in the airline industry. You'll hear in a moment his Aussie accent. So, Khan, welcome to our Future Skies.
Hi, John. It's good to see you again. Thanks very much for catching up today.
Well, it's very different to when we last met. We've chatted a number of times in your role at Flyadeal. We're going to speak to your other fellow Aussie colleague about that airline. But Oman Air, as I mentioned, it's not one of what we call the big three hub carriers here in the region. What I read with your appointment is you've been brought in for a transformation of the airline. So just set the scene a bit about Oman Air's credentials and what does transformation mean?
So Oman Air is a well-established airline. It's been around for more than 30 years. And it's, over that time frame, has developed into really a beautiful airline. It has a very nice product. It has a fantastic crew ethos and a good service culture. We have wonderful crew. We have fantastic catering, a very modern product. And really from and world-class OTP. In fact, it's won the regions and Africa's best OTP performance both in 22 and 23. And as an absolute score, I think it's the highest out of any airline in the world in 23. So it's really
just something. Just to clarify, for any non-aviation listeners, that's on-time performance.
On-time performance, that's right, which of course our customers greatly value.
Absolutely.
And so really it's a wonderful airline from a customer-facing point of view. In the back end, it's an airline that's been around for 30 years and it hasn't gone through a proper full transformation. And that's what you were referring to in your introduction there. And, you know, there's a lot to look at. I mean, the airline still has a lot to digitize. There's processes, there's systems, there's appropriate organization structures, and, you know, new review of contracts, simplification of the fleet, you know, having another look at the product that we provide for our customer demographic. So there's really no stone that we're going to leave unturned as part of the transformation effort. It's a multi-year program that we're embarking on. It started last year, and our chairman's been on record about updating the media about the early results, and they were positive. This year, and with me coming on board, and we're resourcing up some more for the efforts that we need to for the transformation, it's going to be a far deeper dive into the organisation. We'll be expanding the agenda we're looking at, and we're embarking on our journey to transform the airline into one that's much more commercially focused, as well as doing the things that it's done very well in the past. And there is a significant economic program that Oman has, a Vision 2040 program, and tourism is one of the pillars of that program. And, you know, we have a responsibility as Oman Air to play our part in fulfilling that. And in fact, that's the opportunity for us. And in making the business fit for purpose, we'll be able to invest in our growth, we'll be able to invest in our resources, we'll be able to invest in the latest products and increase digitalization, and really play our part in what the program is in Oman.
Well, I've been chatting to other people here at the AGM, and I think one thing that is not lacking in the Middle East, in the Gulf region, is a recognition of the role of aviation. It seems to me, especially coming from what I call old Europe, it's a really vibrant part of the world. I've been to Oman. I know it's a beautiful country. You've got a new airport as well, in effect, as well, to operate from. So I guess it's a multi-stranded approach looking ahead. You mentioned the Vision 2040 as far as the country is concerned, but you've got probably multiple markets and kinds of customers you'll be tapping into in the next 20 years or so.
Absolutely. Look, I think aviation is equally important. Doesn't matter where you are on the globe and on every continent, it is a huge enabler of economic activity and of tourism. Oman itself, as a country in the region, and you know, it's a vast region, and some of the big heavyweights in our industry are based next door. But Oman itself has its own unique proposition. It is an absolutely beautiful country. Its assets are really unique and very well looked after. And in fact, the development in Oman, in my short time I've been there, and what I see, it keeps that heritage at its core, and the charm and the whole feel of it, you know, stays intact, and they're doing an absolutely wonderful job. They're building significant tourism assets to enable more visitors to come to Oman, and so, you know, there's a lot to show off. It's a beautiful culture. They're lovely people, and as I say, we are an enabler to, you know, help deliver that for the country. So we have a role to play. There is a big point-to-point market to develop. We're already in it, but the tourism targets are almost doubling by 2040 to what they are now. So, you know, we have to grow to be able to play our part in delivering that. That's there, and it's important, and that's the journey that we're on. Transit traffic is part of our business, is the reality as well. I mean, our markets go to the east, within the GCC, to the subcontinent nearby, and also to the Far East. And all of those markets have point-to-point traffic. They also have some transit traffic. And the customer demographic in each of those markets is different, but all relevant to Oman. So, you know, we see that footprint as being there. It'll be expanded on over time. And, you know, through network partners we have current and future to come, we look to expand that footprint even further and bring people from even further afield to Oman.
And from what you're saying, Colin, I mean, it wouldn't worry you that there are these big three airlines, you know, Emirates, Qatar and Etihad, who are the major kind of hub connectors. And you've worked in the region, so you know about Saudi Arabia as a large market as well. You've already described as multi-stranded approach to your strategy. So you definitely see a real opportunity to grow and find your own place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're not looking to be an Etihad or an Emirates or a Qatar Airways. That's not our place in life here. We have Oman as its own destination in its own right, and everything it has to offer as something that's uniquely ours, and we can link directly for people to come to. Also, there is an outbound market. I didn't touch on that, but there is an outbound market as well for Omanis travelling outbound, and they travel to different parts of the world in both directions from where we're located. And then there's some of the network offering that we have is a little bit unique, and we offer an opportunity to transit in a different way and a different convenience for some of the points that we operate. So that remains relevant as well. But that's not sort of the core of what we do, nor is it something that we sit there and plan to put in an order anytime soon for 100 aircraft or anything like that. You know, it's really about what's unique to us and our niche and our position that, you know, we can leverage here that suits our market and our airline.
And you were running previously a low-cost airline, so all the advanced technology we're seeing being used these days, digital, both from a customer point of view and running a business, is something you've got a lot of experience in. And I mentioned, I know you have a new airport as well, which I think is also taking a chance with that modernization to use digital means of running its business. So I guess that's setting you up really looking well into the future. You know, we're in an age now of not just digital, but AI. Would you see it that way, Colin?
I mean, definitely. We're blessed in our airports have already gone on a modernization journey. So we've got good terminals and very modern terminals, and they have a lot of the newest technology. I mean, our airline has not digitized enough, if I'm blunt about it. I mean, where I was before was entirely about digitization. In fact, we launched the airline completely digitally. So we have all that upside in terms of introducing more of that. And frankly, it doesn't take a lot of time. The technology is there and it's well developed. We've just got to grab a hold of it and implement it as quickly as we can, and use it to expand our footprint, to expand our distribution capability, make it more efficient, and make it very easy for our customers to come and you know, use Omani. So that's certainly, digitization is one of the key transformation pillars that we'll be working on.
And do you think new aircraft types are going to help you in these objectives? I mean, you have a pretty young fleet anyway. Do you think there's more to look around at that will help there?
We have a bit of a mixed fleet at the moment. Mm-hmm. We're in that phase of going from, you know, sort of older to new generation. In our wide bodies, we have A330 aircraft, and we have...
They're moving out, aren't they?
And they will be moving out at some point. We're currently determining when. I don't know the answer to that yet. And we have 787. So at least in terms of the future fleet, we're already on a modern aircraft type. And in the narrow bodies, we have both 737 NGs, 800 and 900s, but we've got a big complement of MAXes, and we've got more MAXes to come. And as we move forward, the NGs will be phased out in the coming few years, and we'll be an all-MAX fleet in the narrow body aircraft.
Well, Colin, that's a good point to wrap up. I really appreciate your time today, especially being so fresh into the role. It's all ahead of you. So, Colin Corfiati, CEO of Oman Air, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for being on our Future Skies podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks very much, John. All the best to you.
Thank you. Saudi Arabia has got real ambitions to move away from being an oil-dependent country and diversify and advance its economy under the banner of Vision 2030. The airline sector is a key part of this. And I'm speaking now with two of the country's carriers. One is an airline which has not yet flown, and the other is a very young airline. I'm here with Tony Douglas, CEO of Riyadh Air. So welcome to our Future Skies, Tony.
Hello, John. Good to see you again.
First time we've actually met, I think, in Dubai. No, it's the second time. We've met at a big travel show, but you're a man of a goal. For you were Etihad, running that airline before, and wide experience, of course, in the industry from aerospace, airports and airlines. And the airline we're going to talk briefly about today has not even been born yet. The work is in progress. You're the man in charge. That is Riyadh Air. And I think you take the skies early next year. But it's all part of Saudi's big ambitions to really move their economy away from oil dependence. Just give me a quick snapshot of what that means, this Vision 2030, as they call it.
So this is probably the biggest civil aviation startup in the last 40 years, certainly within this region. And obviously, it's a function of what's going on in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. a very, very vibrant, fast-moving economy with a clear strategy of how it wants to diversify its economy with a target of a vision of 2030. And I think we'd all accept that there's not a good example anywhere in the world of a vibrant economy that doesn't have world-class connectivity. And that's what the new national carrier is all about, connecting the kingdom to the world, and of course the world to the amazing tourism attractions in the kingdom.
Well, I noticed in the vision statement, they actually talk about transforming our unique strategic location into a global hub, connecting three continents, Asia, Europe and Africa. And indeed, I'm sure you're going to go beyond that.
Yeah, and look, the kingdom is two-thirds the size of Western Europe, so it's an enormous landmass. It secured the Asian Winter Olympics in 2029. And I'll start with that one, because many people go, how could that be, a Winter Olympics? But, of course, if you're two-thirds the size of Western Europe, you've got two oceans, you've got mountains, you've got deserts, you've got incredible scenery. And that's what makes the place so special. For the last decade, the kingdom's been open for tourism. There's really easy access to it now. And places like Alula, almost like a cradle of humanity, 3,000 years worth of history, and the new Red Sea Resort, as well as the incredible destination attractions within Riyadh, are the reasons why last year, according to Google Analytics, the kingdom, would you believe, was the second most internet searched tourism destination in the world. Again, the reason why the next question, how do I get to, needs a new national carrier.
Well, Tony, I first came to Saudi Arabia, I did a couple of times, way back in the 1980s, and I remember then it was eye-opening. I'd never been to this part of the world. I'm just looking and itching to get back and see what you're describing, because I know it's an amazing place. Another difference in terms of Saudi Arabia, perhaps some listeners won't be aware, it's got a massive population and pretty young population skewing in terms of profile.
Well, the average age of the kingdom's 29.
Right.
The population is in the mid 30 millions, but to put that into context, the capital city Riyadh, in terms of landmass, is the equivalent of the whole of the inside of the M25 in London. It's got a population as a capital city four times the size of Qatar. So I think it illustrates that there's a market that is hugely underserved currently, where demand is far in excess of supply. And of course, economically, because there's so much going on in the kingdom now, people really want to be able to get there and to enjoy it themselves.
And another question, Tony, putting this in context, I mean, this is a vibrant part of the world. We're seeing growth around Saudi Arabia, not least here in Dubai. Emirates has been a large airline for, well, certainly 20 of its 40 years of existence. We're seeing big aircraft orders in India, in the Gulf, in China, in Turkey. Nobody's talking about cannibalization, and we just talked about population size. I guess that's not a worry that really keeps you awake at night. It's all going to be about new traffic development.
Yeah, it's quite the opposite. We're so underserved currently. For us, this is going to be about catch-up, and we need to catch up fast. And we're also, of course, talking about last year, the second fastest growing economy in the world. So not only once you've caught back up, it's how do you maintain pace with what's going on in the kingdom. So in terms of cannibalisation, we don't see that that's going to be a risk any time for a long time. And we've quite frankly been leaking so much of our traffic to other places because we have been underserved.
Tony Douglas, CEO of Riyadh Air, we'll get back to you to hear how it pans out when you begin flying next year. Tony, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Thank you, John.
We're lucky enough to speak to a couple of CEOs who are actually quite new to their jobs for this particular episode at the IATA AGM, and I'm now joined by one of those. He's Stephen Greenaway, and though he's new to his job, he's certainly not new to the industry. He's widely experienced. He's held a number of leadership positions around the world, in his native Australia, in US Canada, and now here in the Gulf. So Stephen is the new CEO of Fly Adeel. Stephen, welcome to Our Future Skies.
Good morning, John. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. And we've just been speaking to one of your fellow Aussies who was in the role that you've now acceded to. That was Con Kofiatis. He's moved into Oman Air.
Australians are everywhere.
Absolutely. Taking over. If it's not you, it's the Irish.
Well, he's gone up the road to Oman Air. So he's here.
Exactly.
Of Oman Air.
That's
yeah,
right. Precisely. So listen, Stephen, I mentioned you've been around the world, but you're new to Saudi. And Saudi Arabia is a really interesting market that they want to change their economy away from oil dependence. They've got Vision 2030. We talked also with Tony Douglas about what that means to him running the new airline Riyadh Air. Tell me, as you come into this position, what does it mean to you, and what was the excitement for you to take the post?
Yeah, so certainly new to Saudi Arabia, but not new to the region. I helped set up Jazeera in Kuwait, and I've also worked in the UAE for Emirates as an advisor or consultant many years ago. But it's good to be in the kingdom. I think that, you know, it was, I did some work. My actual last job at Scoot, when I was chief commercial officer, was actually opening up the Jeddah route between Singapore and Jeddah. And so I had a little bit of a flavor of, I suppose, Saudi Arabia. That was 16 and 17, so 2016, 2017. The change is unimaginable, And I don't know where to start. You know, from my impression after taking a couple of trips in 16, 17, where effectively the country was closed, you couldn't get a tourism visa. You could either come on a religious visa, so you're Muslim on a pilgrimage, or you had to come on a business visa, and it took about a month to get the business visa issued, and they took your passport away for 2 weeks. And I remember that because it was traumatizing just to get into the country. And then coming in, and when I was being interviewed back, I think it was September, if I'm not incorrect, last year. And I'm driving down the road, and there was a huge temporary stage that had been set up for Phantom of the Opera.
Right.
So live music couldn't even be played when I was visiting 16. So, and here was this stage, and I said to the driver, I said, what is that? And he said, oh, Phantom of the Opera. It's really good. You should go. I'm like, I just can't believe this. And so every day is a new day. You see the country opening up. You can get a visa on arrival now. It's very, very easy. And the country is completely opening up for business and for travel and tourism. So it's a phenomenal thing. 2030, I think that, you know, everyone talks about the headline projects, you know, the NEOM or what have you. And rightly so. I mean, they garner the attraction. But what I've sort of been saying to people is underneath that, there's a huge foundational change in the country. So if you dig a little bit deeper, you can see the government's got targets on life expectancy in terms of women inclusion in the workforce, home ownership, health, all of these type of things that don't necessarily grab the headlines, but are fundamental in terms of changing society.
Massive change.
Massive change.
They live.
Massive change. And all of this is going sort of unheralded, I suppose. It just ticks away at the bottom. So you see all of that. And then you see the projects, you know, and I always say, people say, oh, well, you know, it's bound to fail. It's too ambitious. And my retort to that, if you take Riyadh Airport as an example, I was lucky enough to see the master plan about 2 months ago. And I sort of say, even if they build 50% of the thing, it's phenomenal. You know, even if they don't get to the 100%, and they will get to the 100%, they're determined. But a lot of the stuff, even if they just build half of it, it will be a world beater. So yes, have they set their ambitions high? Yes, it's easy to sit on the sidelines and throw stones at that if you wanted to. But at least they're trying. And what you see is day in, day out, changes. You know, I used to be based in the UK, and you know how difficult it is to access public services and stuff. Everything goes on your mobile phone in Saudi Arabia. Once you're in the system, if you want a car, mobile phone. If you want to buy a house, everything. You want to order a passport, mobile phone. You know, so the country is completely e-commerce driven now, or mobile commerce driven, and you do see day in, day out the changes in the country. So it's tangible. It's not make believe.
And the airline that you're now running, Flyadeal, is itself, I guess you would term it, a low-cost airline. It's a young airline, only been around since 2017.
Yes.
That would have been unheard of in the past. I mean, we started with low-cost airlines in this region, the likes of Air Arabia and Fly Dubai, when they began, but not in Saudi Arabia.
No.
That has happened, and perhaps just before I ask you to answer the question, there's a massive population in Saudi Arabia, unlike some of the other Gulf countries, but very young.
Yes.
And I guess that fits well with the airline that's been created with Flyadeal.
Absolutely. I think LCCs in this region are still underrepresented. Mm-hmm. You know, you can only name a few, like Jazeera. Jazeera's only still 25 aircraft, if I'm not mistaken. Air Arabia is certainly the biggest in the region. But even then, when you compare it to, say, an EasyJet or a Ryanair, they're nowhere to be seen. They're a great airline, don't get me wrong, but they're not of the scale that we're used to, say, in Europe or North America, or like Southwest or something like that. So LCCs in this part of the world are certainly underrepresented, number one. Number two, if you talk specifically about Saudi Arabia, interestingly, there were LCCs in the market, but couldn't make it stick. So Sama, as an example, if you recall, many years ago, And, you know, at the end of the day, I think it was funding, and also the kingdom had, probably over a decade ago, price caps. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't charge any more than X on Riyadh Jeddah, as an example. And that was just, it was just that, mm-hmm. you know, killed off a lot of the competition. That's all gone now. Yeah. So the market is completely open, it's completely free, which is fantastic. And thus you've got this thriving aviation sector. So you're right, in terms of population, very, very young. 80% of the population is below 40. You've got a reasonably high disposable income, and that is growing mm-hmm. with the development of the country. And you've effectively got really three to four carriers. And I say that because you've got Saudia, ourselves, Flynas, and then to come Riyadh Air. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the three that it currently exist, and we know Riyadh Air is obviously high-end and full service. You've got Saudi, who is a you know, full-service carrier. You've got Flynas, so I'd call them a hybrid because mm-hmm. they have a business class. They don't have a full-density A320 like we do. They have 170 seats. They have lounges, frequent flyer. So they're a hybrid, sort of mm-hmm. Virgin Australia-esque type of thing, if you can equate that. And then we're sitting at the, dare I say, the bottom, which is the LCC. You know, we are in all shapes and sizes. We're what you would define as an LCC mm-hmm. That you would find in Europe or anywhere else. And that's the space we play, and that's the space we enjoy.
And as I said, this young population, I mean, Gen Zs, it seems to me, the world over, want to travel. Yes. I was reading even a throwaway statistic that most of these young Saudis, they don't just have a mobile phone, they typically have two mobile phones.
Yes, yeah. So why stop at one?
Exactly. They're used to using digital, as you said, the whole country is going that way. Exactly. And they want to travel, and probably not only within the kingdom or the region, probably as far afield as they can.
Absolutely. And don't forget, it's not just the mobile phone, it's payments as well. You mm-hmm. know, it's effectively a cashless society. Mm-hmm. You don't see that usually keeping up in most societies. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd be quite advanced in one thing, but the actual payments hasn't caught up. Payments is actually quite sophisticated in the country. Mm-hmm. It is a young population. But don't also forget, if you have a closer look at the country and the dynamic, there's market segments that exist today that didn't exist, you know, 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. The most obvious one is females, independent females, independent female travel. So it would have been unheard of 10 years ago that if a woman wanted to go with her girlfriends and go shopping in Dubai or something or whatever the activity.
Just wouldn't have happened.
Wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And now it does mm-hmm. happen. You see that. And that's fantastic. And that's only the tip of the iceberg. There is a whole heap of other travel segments. One that astounds me more than anything else is you'd be surprised how many Saudis actually don't know their country. Mm-hmm. So they either come from Jeddah or Riyadh, but they don't really know what else is on offer in the country. Mm-hmm. They haven't traveled their country.
Right.
And that's fair, I suppose. I haven't traveled all the length and breadth of Australia either. But mm-hmm. I often get commentary from Saudis themselves saying, oh, I went to Alula. I couldn't believe how beautiful it was. Mm-hmm. I said, you've never been before. And I was like, no, I could never get there. It was too expensive. It was inaccessible. It wasn't open. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these places, their equivalent to Petra and so forth, wasn't open to the public. So it doesn't matter if you're a Saudi, you couldn't go there. So all of these are now opening up. So you have a young, reasonably wealthy population. The country is opening up. Transportation links are developing. Market segments that didn't exist 10 years ago are now existing or developing, and that's the exciting part more than anything else. And then on top of that, you've got all the inbound tourism and business that, again, didn't exist. I actually literally met someone at the conference yesterday who said that I went to a conference in Saudi Arabia. I went home to the wife and said, she asked me where we're going to go for the summer holiday, and I said, well, she'll go to Saudi Arabia. And you would have never had that 10 years ago. And that it's not booming yet, but it's certainly growing at a fast pace, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And I guess you've got a new aircraft to order in for fleet, so you're going to expand.
Yes.
You're already flying outside of Saudi Arabia. Yep. You're not a long-haul airline, but is that something you could imagine might happen? If you look deep into the future, is that something maybe within your own thought process?
As we say in the region, inshallah. At the end of the day, if you put a pin in Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. and put 5 hours around Saudi Arabia, there's a huge population. Mm-hmm. You know, everything from southeastern Europe all the way down to the subcontinent and Africa and so forth. So there's plenty in our backyard with the fleet that we have, the 320s and soon to be 321s in quarter one of 2026. To be getting on with mm-hmm. in my mind. Do I want to go long haul? I have long haul in my blood, as you know, from my previous experience at Scoot. I think there's a market there. Now, again, everyone talks about long haul, low cost. It doesn't work, it does, mm-hmm. or what have you. For me, it works selectively. Yeah. Transatlantic, it's very difficult because of the capacity, and you have full service carriers that can dump. Mm-hmm. But we proved it at Scoot in Asia, and I certainly believe it can be done in this region. Why? Mm-hmm. You have two market segments more than anything else that are specific to the region that really drive the high volume, low yield market, which is effectively two things. One is the worker traffic, so workers coming into the kingdom. Mm-hmm. either for the subcontinent or Southeast Asia, or the Hajj or Umrah or religious traffic.
It's a massive
mover,
isn't it?
Which is massive.
Growing now as they're making more visas.
The demand is insatiable. Okay, mm-hmm. The only thing that's holding demand back is visas.
Right.
So you have to get a religious visa to go to some of the sites and so forth and get access to some of the sites. And that obviously needs to be controlled. If they didn't control it, it would just be overrun. So that is controlled, but it is increasing year on year, and there's an insatiable appetite for that as well. So that's very specific to the region, very specific to the country. And again, you have this huge volume, relatively low yield, that is something that we would like to target in the future.
We've talked about the massive growth of Saudi Arabia,
sure.
which Fly Ideal's going to be part, and spoken with other leaders here at the conference. How does that stack up against the industry being in a spotlight, understandably, about sustainability credentials? Are you optimistic about that, and can the two go together, growth and the industry becoming more sustainable?
Yeah, so I think a couple of things. I think just as an overall statement, I don't think the industry's done themselves any favours in terms of how we position ourselves and the impact on the environment. If you speak to some people, it's like we're the whole reason why the world is going to end, which is simply not the case. It's 2% of global emissions. Now, is that 2% too high? Of course it is. I mean, would we like it to be zero? Absolutely. There's a lot of talk about sustainable fuel, as an example. For me, anything that you do, it's always a question of the carrot or stick. And unfortunately, what I'm sort of seeing is that around the world and jurisdictions, it's more of a stick. You're being threatened, fined, penalized for not doing X, Y, and Z. And if we talk about specifically sustainable fuel, sustainable fuel and what have you, that's ridiculous. To be penalized because we don't produce the fuel, but we've been penalized because we don't use it, but we don't have access to it. Is that sort of so it's that merry-go-round. I'd much rather anything that touches sustainability, be it sustainable fuel or SAF or what have you. It should be a carrot approach, which is you're incentivizing to embrace these technologies or to embrace these embrace fuel, the sustainable fuel, or what have you. And I think that's where there needs to be a recalibration. The second thing is, like it or not, at the end of the day, as an airline CEO, if I was given a plane tomorrow that didn't use any fuel or just use electricity, I would buy it.
You'd be delighted.
I would be delighted because all of a sudden 25% of my total cost disappears off my, obviously electricity would cost a little bit, but nowhere near as much as fuel. And in the meantime, before we get to that, we are spending billions and billions of dollars on the latest, most efficient aircraft because it saves us money. Yes, it has an impact on the environment in terms of a lesser impact on the environment, which is fantastic. But we're all out to consume less fuel. We're all out to have a lesser impact or smaller footprint. And we're spending billions in the process. And that's what we're doing. I mean, we will be, as an example, an all A320neo fleet in the next couple of years. The most efficient aircraft we can get our hands on. If Airbus made even a more efficient aircraft, we'd probably be buying it by now. And so there is an incentive in the market. There's a natural incentive to be able to do that. But as I said, overall, in terms of the global initiatives, I'd like to see more of a carrot rather than a stick. With the industry in terms of adopting certain measures.
Stephen, it's been great to chat with you today, hear your thoughts and very many exciting things about the Saudi economy, Saudi Arabia as a country. I haven't been for a long time.
You must come.
I know we've chatted to each other about it before. I want to come, see how it's changed.
You'll get an aircraft model at the end of it.
Ah, well, that's even more of an incentive to come. So, Stephen Greenaway, CEO of Fly Ideal, thanks for your time today. Thanks for being on the Our Future Skies podcast.
Thanks, John. Good to see you.
One common question I wanted to put to all the guests I met at the IATA AGM was how they saw that aviation might be different, or what they thought about how aviation might be different in around 10 or 20 years' time. I got some very interesting answers. Willie Walsh, Director General of IATA.
I think it is going to look very different. So again, we can probably learn from what's happened in the past. I looked at the contribution that various regions of the world will make to the overall picture. If I go back to 2000, I think the carriers in North America were about 38% of global aviation. If you divide out the RPKs by region, North America was 38. Today, that's 22%.
Yeah.
The Middle East was just under 2.8%. I think today, 9.5%. Chinese domestic market was 2.4% last year. It was closer to 12. India was 0.4. It's at 1.8. So when I look at that, I think, India and China, you know, if the Chinese domestic market is 12%, that tells you what the Indian domestic market represents as an opportunity. So the one area that has been consistent throughout that has been Europe, which has typically been 26-27%. So we've seen significant growth in the Asia-Pacific region, largely on the back of China, significant decline in North America, you know, in terms of its contribution to the global RPKs, and you know, really significant growth in China, and particularly the mesmer. So I think those trends, those patterns are going to continue as we look forward. Stronger growth in the Asia Pacific region. The one area that probably is disappointing for everybody is Africa. You know, Africa.
Yeah, it's a big sleeping giant, isn't it?
2%. 2% in 2000. It's 2% today, and there has to
really
be
shouldn't be that way.
There. Yeah.
Tony Douglas, CEO, Riyadh Air.
Well, let me explain, John. Our vision statement as a startup is as follows: a digitally led business that enables travel. And of course, that's not to be confused with a conventional airline. What we see in 20 years is the digital way in which we all engage with air travel, the way in which we get more bespoke service when we enjoy air travel will be a digital proposition in the same way today it is with so many other lifestyle things that we enjoy. So digital is the key.
Con Kofiertes, CEO, Oman Air.
I was at a small group last night, and we were having a very deep discussion on AI and what AI is going to bring. And I think the consensus was, and it'd be one I subscribe to, we don't even today don't really even know how much it's going to bring. I mean, you know, if you think about when the internet kicked off and where we are today, I don't think anybody back then could have envisaged what would be doing what we are doing today then. So with AI, I think we're only scratching the surface of the possibilities. Some of them we're aware of now and would want to go after, but there's things we haven't even thought of yet that are going to come to us in the years ahead, certainly in a 10 to 20 year timeframe. So I see that being a big part of life going forward. And really in that context, the question becomes whether you're just an airline or you are some other consumer platform that comes from that, because I think what technology enables you to do is take, you know, a core in aviation and being an airline and maybe have a whole bunch of other opportunities that stem from that. Airlines are already exploiting that, but I think there'll be a wider range of things that we can do. Obviously, inside the business, it'll help bring efficiencies, enable economies of scale on a more sort of a low-cost platform, sustainable fuel and new fuel technologies. The 10-20-year timeframe are going to be absolutely critical in terms of, you know, emission promises and undertakings that Oman has and the world has for that matter and the industry has. So I think that will have moved ahead. I would hope by 20 years from now we'll have some kind of new power technology for the aircraft and the engines, and it's not, we've moved even beyond sustainable aviation fuel to perhaps alternative forms of powering the aircraft in a 20-year timeframe. That should well be possible. But one thing's for sure, the thing that will not change is the appetite of a human being to travel. And that will only continue to grow. I think the Middle East and where we are is not at the level of maturity of, say, the North Americas and the Europes in terms of an industry, but they still continue to grow quite significantly. For us, we're in a massive growth spurt right now. There's a lot of aircraft orders that are destined for this region, but that appetite for travel is not going away. It will only increase, and I see travel growing materially for as long as I can see into the future.
Adnan Kazim, Deputy President and Chief Commercial Officer, Emirates.
It's going through a complete change, I think, from what we see today, particularly the experience passenger can get today from the way the technology is shaping up from the biometric, the way the data, the big data has been looked at it and it's been analyzed. A lot of personalization will come in. The consumer will be more closer, I think, to these companies in terms of how they take care of them. They go through a completely different experience when they travel. They will be completely seamless in terms of the paper today, the boarding passes, everything will be run through the cameras, and you just need to enter the airport and from one end to another. Immigration will be a new immigration thinking as well in terms of how you cross with the smart gates, with the tunnels, with so many things shaping up around that area. And that all definitely will change how the experience and how the passenger journey will be much smoother, much better. And even from the technology of even though today we're talking about the SAF, that will be definitely a change will come in the 2030 and beyond, how SAF will kick off and be part of the ecosystem of of aviation. The technology as well around the aircraft manufacturer will look completely, could be different. I mean, today, the fossil fuel that is core and how driving the engines, and can that be a blend or maybe a sort of between the fossil and the SAF, and even from the aircraft, part of the aircraft will be electric, and the journey, how things will shape up with the future technology. So it's a lot to be seen, a lot change will come in, a lot will be driven by the technologies and the datas, and the aviation definitely will be reshaping itself as a way forward.
Stephen Greenaway, CEO, Flyadeal.
The industry, for me, never fails to surprise me. Even yesterday, we were talking to some aircraft lessors who have said, we're actually in a market situation we've never seen before in terms of such constrained supply with aircraft and so forth. So COVID 3-4 years ago was something we've never ever faced before and so forth. So where do I see, I suppose, Saudi Arabia, and where do I see the aviation activity here? A lot of people ask me about how long is this boom, inverted commas, going to last for? And I would say in Saudi Arabia, there's a long way to go, simply because a lot of the market segments are not mature yet. So you can't compare this region with, say, Europe, which is very mature, quite established, and North America, or even Australia. This is a burgeoning market. It's a new market. It is not mature in any way. It is growing quickly. And I still think it's got a long way to go, particularly in Saudi Arabia. And so from that perspective, I think that you will see the growth, the accelerated growth happening over the next 5 to 10 years, unabated, in my mind. Also, don't forget that a lot of the infrastructure projects we're talking about in this region come online over the next 5 to 10 years anyway, and that will only enhance and boost things further, such as new airports and destinations and the Red Sea resorts and all of that type of stuff. So I still think this region's got a long way to go in terms of development, in terms of maturity, and we're growing fast, but that's still going to take time. And the one thing I'd leave you with is that, you know, if you have a look at, we're speaking of this quite frequently, capacity in terms of the greatest capacity point-to-point routes in the world. It's always been the Sydney, Melbournes, the Osaka, Tokyos, all of this type of stuff. Jeddah, Riyadh was nowhere to be seen even in the top 10. We're now number 3 or number 2, depending on who you speak. In the world. You're now number 3 or number 2, depending on who you speak to. And we'll definitely be number 1 next year. There's 75 frequencies a day between both cities each way. And that came out of nowhere 5 years ago. And so that is the market potential. That is the excitement that is in the market going forward, I think. And that will certainly, I believe, last us for the next 5 to 10 years at the very least.
So that's it from this special magazine episode of Our Future Skies at the IATA AGM here in Dubai. It's really been a great opportunity to catch up with a range of industry leaders to hear their views, not only on the future of the industry, but their particular airlines. So until next time, for me, John Strickland, it's goodbye.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast series are those of the speakers and do not reflect the views, policy, or position of American International Group, Inc., or its subsidiaries or affiliates, AIG. Any content provided by the speakers in this podcast series is their opinion and is not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or group of individuals, or anyone or anything. AIG makes no warranty or representations as to the accuracy, completeness, correctness, or validity of any information provided during this podcast series, and AIG will not be liable for any errors, inaccuracies, or omissions in the information provided during this podcast series, or any damages, losses, liabilities, injuries resulting from or arising from the podcast, including your use of the podcast.